The Press Pass on WKXL is presented by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. Check out either of their two locations, one at the Concord Hospital campus, the other 125 North Main Street. The Prescription Center will also deliver your prescriptions to you free of charge. That's the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first.
This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they so Manny, they so David, so they start taking people for granted.
Opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team out, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
Good morning, this is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Patriots and the Colts. Tonight, 8:15 p.m., Patriots go inside the Dome in Indianapolis, take on the Colts. Pats sit with a 9-4 record, Colts at 7-6. Colts are dangerous. In my view, Patriots looking to keep pace with the Kansas City Chiefs. They won on Thursday night, now 10-4 on the season. Patsy, as mentioned, at 9-4. Appreciate joining us for the Press Pass, Bill Belichick, in just a moment. This Colts team has been in just about every game this year, and I feel like this is a really dangerous threat for the Patriots. It's a road game against a tough team, and one that you may not see as being, you know, as competitive as a Chiefs game or a Ravens game or a Titans game. Patriots have won 7 games in a row, and this Colts team is really good on the ground. Patriots have a challenge there. Their pass defense has been amongst the best in football this year. They're third overall and has been the best in football the last 3 weeks. But again, against the run, they've been challenged, particularly in that Titans game. So really, that's the key. I mean, can the Patriots stop the Colts run? We're going to talk about that right now with Patriots head coach Bill Belichick. Morning, Bill. How are you?
Hi, good, Chris.
I wanted to ask about your pass defense this year, and particularly the role that the linebackers played there. Flexibility, and in particular, you know, Kyle Van Noy and the role that he has played.
Yeah, Kyle's Kyle's a very good pass defender. Watching him in college, he was walked out in coverage a lot. You know, for a player of his size and athleticism, you usually see those kind of guys, you know, rushing the passer all the time and playing, more on the line of scrimmage. And then, you know, was kind of used in a similar role in Detroit, you know, where he played off the ball a lot. So he's had a lot of coverage experience, which is, I would say, rare for an outside linebacker. So both in college and for, you know, the early part of his pro career. So he has a very good understanding of what's going on behind him in the passing game, combination routes and how to leverage receivers and combine that with reading the quarterback and man coverage and, you know, working in combos and man coverage and things like that. I mean, there's obviously a lot of things in pass coverage that are, you know, very high degree of difficulty, and defensive backs spend all day and all week going through those. And then you put a linebacker into that situation who's, you know, spent a lot of time defending the run, playing the outside running game, rushing the quarterback, running pass rush games, and then throw all that pass coverage on them. And it's a big load. But Kyle's very, very good at that, very instinctive in the passing game. Was an excellent run player, has played on the line and off the line for us, which that in itself is hard to do, but you know, his athleticism in space relative to some other outside linebackers is good, very good. And his instinctiveness is good, his awareness, ability to change coverages based on motion and things like that. He's not a defensive back, but it's certainly on the high end of the linebackers being close to defensive backs in terms of their awareness, their ability to adjust and recognize things in pass coverage. like a lot more of what you would see from an inside linebacker than, you know, than an on the line, you know, 3-4 type outside linebacker. So he's done a good job for us and is able to play all those spots. And honestly, you kind of forget about how easily he does it. You sort of take it for granted. You know, Jamie's got some of those same skills too. So does High. So we're really fortunate to have, you know, multiple players who can, you know, who can do those things and, you know, go in and out of different looks, fronts, and coverage responsibilities. And they all work well together. So
I had a question as well. Is, you know, one of the Colts linebackers said they're going to essentially try to make Mac beat them in this game and, quote, you know, see what he can do. How much do you read into what a player or a coach says prior to a game when they seem to, you know, give you insight as to what their game plan may be?
Yeah, well, we'll get ready and prepare for the game and play the game and see what happens.
I want to ask you about what you've seen from the Colts offensive attack as well, particularly the rushing game, where Jonathan Taylor has obviously had an incredible season. What are you seeing there?
All right. Well, the Colts are a well-balanced team. You know, it starts with the offensive line. They have a lot of experience on the line there with, you know, Kelly and then Nelson and Glowinski and, you know, Smith and Fisher. So they definitely know what they're doing, and they've done it together for a while other than Fisher. You know, so – and Doyle. You can put Doyle in that group too. And, you know, Cox. So, like, those guys have played together. You know, the backs have a good feel for the line, I think. And you know, Taylor's a hard guy to tackle. He's strong, runs through a lot of arm tackles, and then he's very fast. And not many players defensively that can catch him. So, if he gets out in the open, he can, you know, turn that 8 or 10 yard run into a 60 yard touchdown. So, they run a variety of plays. They run gap plays. They run zone plays, and they hand the ball to some of their skill players to keep you honest, which again ultimately opens up things for Taylor or Hines, whoever it happens to be. So but Taylor's, he's strong, he, you know, he catches well, he's got total yards from scrimmage, so, you know, some of that's in the passing game, but you know, he's really been effective when he's been able to get through the line of scrimmage and then, you know, break a 60 or 70 yard run. Just, you know, hard for teams to count on that in the running game, but he's been able to deliver it for him with his speed and running ability.
I was listening to an interview you did about a week or so ago where you talked about Tom and LT being, you know, the best offensive and defensive players you've coached. And in your view, are there players that are so good that no matter what, they will find their way to greatness, as opposed to having to build out, you know, a structure or infrastructure in order for them to have success? And do the greats just kind of find a way?
Yeah, I'd have to give that more thought. I don't know. I would say it'd be hard for me to imagine that Taylor couldn't have played in any system at multiple positions.
Patriots head coach Bill Belichick right there. And when you look at this Patriots offense this year, the job of Josh McDaniels really stands out. There have been so many foundational players who have come in, two wide receivers, two tight ends. You also look at Ramondre Stevenson, a rookie running back, and rookies usually have not played that big of a role in the Patriots offense. Stevenson has. And also, obviously, rookie quarterback in Mac Jones. Josh McDaniels has done a brilliant job of taking an offense that was sputtering early on in the season and is now not just functional, but potent, this Patriots offense. I talked with McDaniels about that.
Hey, Josh, how are you?
Good, Chris. How are you doing?
Awesome. I was just wondering how you'd categorize this season for you in terms of, you know, the challenges or stress or joy that you've gotten from all these foundational players coming into your offense, rookie quarterback. What is it? What's it been like to you, maybe compared to, you know, previous seasons?
I always kind of go into each year, you know, refreshed and renewed. You know, we knowing that each year is going to be a different set of challenges, a different set of circumstances, and a different team. And I think this year's team has provided a lot of new energy. And I think that the ability to really pour into them, you know, and try to create a foundation for a lot of them in our offense and our culture here in New England, and then see them take to it, adapt to it, and really grow and learn, you know, how they fit into the bigger piece of the puzzle, has been really a great experience for all of us. I kind of refrain from comparing years one versus another, because I've had so many, I've been blessed to be a part of a lot of great teams and a lot of great groups to be around. So this one's just it's another group that I'm really cherishing every day and every opportunity to be with them. You can tell, I'm sure, by talking to a lot of them and seeing us on the sideline and during the course of the games, how much fun and joy we're having with one another. And I think that's a great component of team sports. And it's obviously, you know, you kind of feel better about getting up and going to work every day when that's the atmosphere you're going into. So again, blessed to be a part of this group and excited to get ready on the last four games here.
Obviously going into the Dome this weekend to play. And it's long been said that it's challenging for teams in ideal weather situations to go and play in Foxborough. And I'm curious, is it ideal for you to go in and play at a Dome, or is there some things that take place that perhaps, you know, are unseen that make it challenging for you, or is it truly ideal conditions?
Certainly the conditions in terms of throwing the ball and handling the ball will be, should be ideal. You know, there won't be moisture, obviously. There's not going to be any wind, you know, and the temperature should be regulated. So in that regard, it should be pretty docile in that regard. But anytime you go inside, you know, and play in a dome, there's certainly a noise factor that is going to play a role in your preparation, especially when you're the offense, you know, which you know, that's what we'll be doing. So, you know, there's going to be an element of using the silent cadence. There's always challenges involved in, you know, just your operation. We'll practice and prepare for that all week long, like we normally do for all away games, you know, and try to do a good job of, you know, eliminating or limiting, you know, any issues, penalties, snap counts, you know, too many timeouts being used, et cetera, due to the operation. But this is a noisy place to play. Most of the places we play are. This will be another challenge combined with the fact that this is a really good unit we're playing against.
Josh McDaniels right there. Now more on this Patriots offense evolving, and particularly looking at their wide receivers. And they weren't called upon to do much in the Bills game, where the Patriots threw the ball just three times during the course of that contest. Blocking was what they needed to do in that game. Route running is what they needed to do in that game, knowing the football was probably not coming in their direction. But we have seen incredible growth in foundational year for Kendrick Bourne in particular. I talked to Patriots wide receivers coach Troy Brown about that.
Hey, Troy, how are you?
I'm great, man. How about you?
Awesome. Just wanted to get your thoughts on the job that Josh has done this year, with obviously rookie quarterback, foundational players, tight ends, a couple obviously wide receiver, running back in his first year as well. He's had a lot of carries. What's been your take on how he has been able to get everybody up to speed and continue to kind of progress this offense in a positive direction?
I just think he's got a tremendous mind for the game, and he's able to think things through. And, you know, it always try to put the team in the best position to succeed. So, and I mean, I even played for Josh back in 2006. I think he did a remarkable job with that offense, you know, being that we put that together. You know, with only like 5 days to go before our first game, and he did a remarkable job with that offense as well during the 2006 season. So I just think he's got so much experience at doing it and being able to work with quarterbacks and offensive players. And he's just, he's got a knack for it, you know, and he puts a lot of thought into what he's doing.
When you have, you know, a couple foundational year guys like Nelson and Kendrick, what is your thought about how you go about getting them to where they need to be and progress throughout the course of the year? Like, is there a blueprint for what you want to do? Is each person different? Like, how do you start them in one spot and get them to a place where they're comfortable enough with the offense to have success around this time of the year?
Well, of course, they're all different, you know, different personalities and everything. But, you know, for the most part, they just those guys themselves, they do a tremendous job and they already have great attitudes about the work that they're doing. So that makes the job a little bit easier, a lot easier when those guys are willing to accept whatever you're putting on their plate, and then they go out and try to execute it the way you teach them how to do it. And so I give those guys most of the credit for being the type of players that can adapt to different types of situations. And, you know, again, the unselfish guys, it's always a lot easier for the coach when you have a room full of unselfish people.
Yeah, just a question about last week, where obviously, you know, there's three passes in that game and wide receivers do a great job of blocking. What's the thought process after that one where guys obviously want to catch the football, they want to be targeted, but it doesn't happen? What was the room like after that as compared to, say, another game?
Well, you know, I think it was the guys were fine. They just they were happy to get a win and excited about getting the win. And, you know, I think they understood the situation. And, you know, again, like I said, it's a room full of unselfish players, especially that the receiver group. You know, they went into that game, and of course, they want every receiver wants to catch a lot of passes, you know, but the conditions didn't dictate that. And so those guys went out and did what they had to do from their standpoint. And that was obviously blocking a whole lot in that game. And so I think a lot of the things that they did in that game helped us win the game as well. So when they understood that their blocks were going to be important to score points.
Interested in the impact of Dante Hightower. We talked with Bill Belichick earlier about Kyle Van Noy and the role that he has played as kind of a Swiss Army knife for this Patriots defense, moving around from one side to the other, dropping back in pass coverage, rushing the passer. Don't quite know what Van Noy is going to do. But you look at, you know, one of the captains of this defense, one of the leaders of this defense, in Dante Hightower, where he perhaps hasn't had as many impact plays as pre-sitting out last season, but he still has had a significant impact. I talked with Gerard Mayo about that.
Hey, Gerard, how are you?
I'm good, Chris. How are you?
Awesome. Wanted to get your take on Dante Hightower so far this year. Obviously, you know, coming off of last year not playing, what's been your feeling on how he's impacted the game both on and off the field?
Yeah, I'll start with off the field. You know, he's definitely taken on a leadership role, obviously being voted a captain by his peers, but really just mentoring the younger guys and even guys who have played in different systems, you know, even like Judon, for example, you know, helping Judon on a lot of things, and just the rest of the guys. He's been great off the field in all aspects. I would say on the field, first and foremost, he brings a physicality to the game that we covet here in New England. Obviously one of these guys that can get downhill and really rock some of these offensive linemen. We always talk about setting the tone, and he is the tone setter. So he's out there playing well for us, no matter what the situation is, early down, third down, you know, you don't want to take this guy off the field.
How about him as an instinctive, you know, football player, A, and B, but also be able to identify what the offense is doing? Obviously he's integral in that role, just like Dev. How is he instinctually and also and seeing the play develop, but also kind of seeing where the play is going to head prior to it starting?
Yeah, I would say, you know, naturally he has very good instincts as a football player. He loves the game of football. I would also say he puts a lot of work into it. You know, he studies a lot of film. He's always asking me questions, you know, picking my brain. He puts a lot of work into knowing exactly what to expect, even though teams play us differently each and every week. Just his overall awareness is really second to none.
Thanks.
Thanks, Chris.
Patriots made sure that they got bulk in this offseason with free agents, particularly on the offensive side of the football. If somebody went down or did not perform, they had somebody else to step in, whether it's at the wide receiver position where Kendrick Bourne has emerged and Aguilar has not been perhaps as impactful as expected, or the tight end position where you have Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, who both seem like they're going to be huge impact players. Smith struggled early on to find his role in the offense, had some drops early on in the season, particularly in that Saints game, but now he finds himself in a spot where he seems to be more comfortable. We heard from him last week on the show. We hear this week from his coach, Nick Caley.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Chris. Good. Yourself?
Awesome. Jonnu's catch in the first quarter of the Bills game was pretty amazing, obviously. What stands out to you about him as an athlete and his ability to make those types of plays and just kind of an athlete overall, something that's kind of jumped out at you? Perhaps?
Yeah, it was a really good play on Jonnu's part. He's explosive. I mean, he probably could have jumped over three of myself standing on top of my shoulders. He gets up there pretty high. He's an explosive player, you know, that can do things, you know, obviously with the ball in his hand. So it was a great effort by him and you know, a good job concentrating all the way through the phase of the catch.
What have you sensed in regard to his progress, say, over the last month? Do you feel like he's in a better place now than he was a month or 2 months ago? And in what areas do you see his improvement, if so?
Yeah, I think every day, every rep you get into it is, you know, a rep that you stack on top of the next one. So I think just, you know, continuing to grow. I mean, he's done a good job working through the scheme. And we throw a lot at the guys in that room. We throw a lot at the guys in our offense in general. So, you know, handling all that stuff, he's done a good job with all that stuff. And, you know, I think just continuing to improve like we all need to do in all fundamentals, blocking, you know, route running, whether it's the releases, top of the routes, it's, you know, sustaining blocks. I think that's the focal point as you get down the stretch. It's a long season, you know, you got to continue to maintain good fundamentals and focus. And that's what we're trying to do. I mean, every day, and we'll continue to do that, not just with Jonnu, but with the entire group. They all got a great attitude and they all come to work, and we're just striving to continue to get better from that standpoint.
Given what's asked of the tight ends in this offense, how challenging is a foundational year, do you think, for, you know, a tight end? Is it more difficult than other offensive positions?
I mean, I think you'd have to ask people that have experience with that. All I can say is, you know, I think we ask a lot of those guys, but so do all the other, you know, there are a lot of other position groups that do too. So ours are a little bit different maybe here and there, and there's other differences with certain other positions too. But just from our standpoint, I think, you know, you lay the groundwork in the offseason program and when you come into training camp, and then each week you try to take the experiences, good and bad, and learn from them. And that's what we try to do. You try to correct some things along the way, and there's plenty of things to correct every week. And you try to enhance the things that you've done, call it relatively well. And that's what we're trying to, you know, obviously strive for consistency and just continued improvement. Yep, thank you.
The Celtics now a third of the way through the NBA season. Celtics going into last night at 500 at 14-14. Really bad West Coast trip at 1-4, but a nice bounce back win against the Milwaukee Bucks, who are second in the East right now in the standings and coming off of an NBA championship. Jason Tatum, 42 points. The Celtics bench was huge on Monday. And that's an area, you know, their depth that is really, really important for this team, you know, moving forward, both on the defensive end and in supplying some supplemental scoring as well. Talked with Celtics head coach Ime Udoka about where things are at one third of the way through the regular season.
Hey, Ime, hope all is well with you. Just a third of the way through the season, what is your sense about, you know, what this team is and what it can, you know, potentially still be?
Hard to say what we are fully because of our lack of, you know, continuity with lineups and guys being inserted in and out of the lineup. And, you know, like we said, we get Jalen back and Josh is missing now. But what we can be is a great defensive team, as we've seen, you know, to get to where we were after the start of lack of time in training camp. And you know, we dropped a little bit, as I mentioned. But to be there and lean on that and make that our identity and rely on that, I think that's a given. Hopefully, the offense will catch up, the shooting will catch up, the numbers will get back to guys' career averages at least, and then obviously it'd be different outcomes in games. But we can be a great defensive team off top. The shots aren't always going to fall, and so what I got back to was, let's rely on that end, let's be great on that end until the other end picks up.
Also talked with Celtics forward Grant Williams about the importance of the Celtics role players.
Hey, Grant, just on, you know, the role players in this game, obviously the first quarter they were able to extend the lead a little bit with their guys. How much do you take it upon yourself to stand up to that type of a run from those guys?
Yeah, teams are bound to make those runs. They came in with great energy. DeMarcus hit two big threes in the beginning of the first quarter, or towards the end of the first quarter. They played with a lot more energy, and they got them back into the game, took that lead, early lead on us. So with us, we tried to respond. Romeo did a phenomenal job in that second quarter. Same with me when we came in and kind of bounced back, because that first quarter we didn't necessarily make as much of an impact we needed to. Shots weren't falling. So that second quarter we kind of just came back in. Same with Dennis and bench unit as well as the starters. And we kind of took the game from there. Just tried to not only establish our mark and not let those bench role guys come in with more energy than us, but also contain the starters.
Celtics take on the Knicks tonight after their matchup with the Warriors yesterday evening. Bruins continue to deal with a lot of COVID issues. Players out of the lineup, difficulty winning games for the Bees. This has been the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Boston Celtics back in action tonight as they host the New York Knicks. Celtics coming off loss last night to the Golden State Warriors, a game which they were competitive against the team that has the best record in the NBA, but could not pull out a victory late as they ended up losing by 4, 111 to 107. Celtics with only 10 active players tonight, non-COVID illnesses, COVID taking players out of the lineup. Al Horford's going to be lost for a long time, as is Grant Williams, because both ended up on the COVID list. Jaylen Brown, though, in the lineup tonight. Jason Tatum as well. Here is Celtics head coach Ime Udoka. So a competitive...
Available. 10?
10, yeah.
How do you deal with being so shorthanded now? I mean, there's even more people now.
Yeah. You know, some of the things we talked about last night is other guys will get a lot more opportunity. You saw that with Aaron last night, and especially with Romeo out now, his minutes will increase as well. Tough one is because of a back-to-back and the short numbers, guys are going to have to play larger minutes than we'd like again. But, you know, we still have to be conscious of guys like Jaylen coming back from the hamstring, although he's good now. Back-to-backs are still tough, and other guys will get more opportunity there. So a guy like Justin, you know, it's unfortunate with Broderick and Sam and some of our two-way guys that are in the health and safety protocols that they won't get the opportunity and some needed minutes there, but we'll increase Peyton's and some of the younger guys as well.
End of game against the Wizards, against the Warriors on Friday night, where the Celtics were able to close but ended up losing in this game despite a 20-point deficit. Celtics were able to get it close at the end as Celtics allowed 68 points in the first half but were able to shut down things defensively in the second frame. Jason Tatum led the way with 27 points on 9-19 shooting from the field at 8 boards and 6 assists as well. He only turned the basketball over once, and I spoke with him postgame about the takeaways on this one as the Celtics down some players but able to be competitive with the Warriors.
Hey, JT, just your upshot on this one as a whole. Obviously, you guys competed well, down some guys against an elite team. What were your big takeaways from this?
Obviously, the second half, we played a lot better. You know, kind of dug ourselves in the hole at first. Regardless of who we had available, you don't want to try to take that into account because, you know, it's... The whole league is dealing with that right now. So, we had a chance. We gave ourselves a chance with, you know, the group that we had available. Especially that second half, the way we played, it felt good.
The Press Pass. I'm Chris Ryan. This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Matthew Judon leads the Patriots with 12.5 sacks this year. And I talked with him about his craft a little bit earlier this season.
Hey, Matt. I hope all is well with you. How would you describe the linebacker's mindset when it comes to getting into the backfield, where you, Juwan, and obviously Dante as well, and Kyle, you guys are really good at blowing up plays in the backfield. What's the mindset there? What's the level of determination to kind of make that happen?
How you doing, Chris? Well, going on with that mindset, it's just an attack mindset. Defense is reactive. But when you see something, you study film, and you're like, I'm positive that this is the play that's about to run, and you're confident in yourself and you trust yourself, and you gain the trust of your teammates and coaches, and you take a chance. And, you know, more times out of none that chance comes up as a negative play for your defense. That's how you become good or great at playing on the opposite line of the scrimmage. So first is about your pre-snap reads, about your alignment. And then is I think lastly is about your mindset. Like, I'm gonna make this play. And I've seen it so many times. Because I watch film or because I study or because I put the extra work in, that I'm confident that if I go right here, I can make that play. And I think that's what That's what, you know, Bent, High, KB, Pooch, you know, so many guys up front, LG, DG, Carl. I think that's what they see. They seen the plays before. And then, you know, sometimes it's just in the moment, it's hard to explain. You'd be like, how you make that play or how you know it was coming. And it's just hard to explain, like, well, I just seen it before. But you didn't see it in a dream, or you didn't see it like, you know, daydreaming or something. You seen it because you put the time in, you put the work in, and you study film. And so I think that's how you become a great player playing on the other line of scrimmage.
Are you guys competitive with one another in, you know, getting to that spot, getting to that spot first? Obviously, there's circumstances that, you know, will come up in the game which don't allow for you to get there first. But are you competitive about getting there first?
I mean, the more plays you make, the more pitchers you get. You know, it's a type of that thing. You know, the more attaboys or good jobs you get, and so I think that feeds your endorphins. And also, who don't want to be that person that make that play, or who don't want to be that person, you know, that get asked to do this because you're making plays. You know, so yeah, we all competitive. But we competitive to where we understand that, you know, if one doing well, we all doing well. We not selfish at all. So competitive is a great word, but, you know, we love to see one another make plays as well.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, no problem, Chris.
Time now for our Legends segment. For this, we're going to go back in time for a couple conversations with Tommy Heinsohn. Of course, Tommy Heinsohn was Celtics basketball, first as a player, then as a coach, then as a broadcaster, and was basically, you know, an encyclopedia of Celtics knowledge. You could go talk to him about anybody from Bob Cousy to Jason Tatum, and was an incredible resource for the years that I was around him with the Boston Celtics. So we're going to hear a couple interviews with Tommy here in this segment as well.
In your view, is this team kind of unique in Celtics history and what they've overcome and how they've defied expectations?
Well, it certainly is a terrific group of players. On the air the other day, I just said that the teams I played with and the teams I coached would be happy to be playing with any one of these guys. They are old-time Celtic players. You know, selfless, play hard, go to win.
The fact that they're playing without Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, is that allowed for, you know, development to you guys like Brown and Tatum? And what do you think is the long-term benefit of that?
Well, what happened when both of those all-star players went down is Tatum and Brown got thrown into the pool and were going to see if they could swim. And they more than were swimming. They won the 100-yard meter race.
I think when you talk about, you know, these guys being all-time Celtics players, I think it's because they're all-around players as well, and the character of the individuals. And it kind of define when you say they're all-time Celtics players. And what is that definition for you, who's been through this, obviously?
Well, the Celtics historically didn't rely on one guy. I mean, Larry Bird came to be the most obvious guy that they relied on to play a great game every game. The teams I played on, everybody was a terrific player, and that's how we beat the Hall of Famers, by just playing great as a team. And that's what this current edition is doing.
Yeah, in that way, as you mentioned, it's certainly a complete, you know, throwback. Even with the big three of Pierce, Garnett, and Allen, you had that star power. And this is a group where a lot of the Celtics team, despite winning championships, were at times underdogs in those series because of Wilt or because of Magic or because of other bigger name stars. So this is kind of a very Celtics type run.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought the beginning of the season that Tatum would be playing like he's playing? Jaylen Brown is averaging over 20 points a game in this series. And Terry Rozier got his first shot at starting, scored a triple-double his first start. Then the next start, he ended up with 30 points. So they, Brad Stevens have brought the three of them along beautifully. And the thing that impresses me the most is that they have accepted the responsibility without wide open eyes, like a deer in the headlights.
Talk about Brad as well, where he is obviously in a lineage of great Celtics coaches, but appears, you know, he approaches the game differently to some extent, obviously, as the game has evolved. What's your analysis of him and how he has kind of come along?
Well, he's unique among the current coaches because most of the coaches in the NBA right now are really afraid to inject mistakes into the equation. And as a consequence, they don't build a ball club. And what Brad Stevens does is go out and try and win and build ball players, develop them as they're going along, which is evident, very evident, with the three young players here in the playoffs.
What was your philosophy in regards to developing, you know, individuals and ball players and giving them responsibility? Because it seems like in your era, when you coached in the 70s, the coaches had more of a hands-on approach than the 80s or 90s, where it became more of a players' league, where you could develop and mentor and such.
Well, it was more of a players' league back then than it is now.
Really?
This is a coach's era here.
Right now it is, but you know, with Jordan and those teams, it was viewed as being a players' league kind of in the 90s. But you say it was extension
teams,
back then. Anyway.
All the teams in when I played, there were only eight teams and there were only 80 players making a living. So they were all terrific players. All Americans didn't make rosters. Mm-hmm. All right. Now we're dealing with kids that are 1 year out of college and into the playoffs, making a name for themselves. So the game, when I played, it was like a jazz group in Harlem jamming at 2 o'clock in the morning, and somebody would do a solo, but everybody else knew how to complement that solo. Right now, what we got is we got the players reading the music, but they're waiting for the coach to turn the page.
It's Tommy Hines.
I talked with the man who has seen and knows more Celtics basketball than any individual, Tommy Heinsohn. No one knows this franchise's history from firsthand experience like you do. When you think of the legendary moments in Celtics playoff history, what comes to mind? What's the most important moments, the kind of turning point moments this franchise has had?
Well, the first championship came in 1957. And it was a double overtime. Then there were some memorable games, like Russell's last year with the balloons and Bird's era, making shots, you know, calling the shots. Games with Bird, the shootout with Bird and Dominique. Watching KG. Well, actually, teams I coached, I mean, a triple overtime game, too.
Yeah.
And Havlicek and Cowens and JoJo and Silas, all terrific, aggressive players. And when we get to the 08 team, you know, the pure joy they had in winning it. And last year's team was pretty interesting. You know, I went up to Jaylen Brown after the season. And I said to him, all the guys I ever played with or coached, they would have loved to play with you guys.
Yeah, that was,
they were playing the right way.
Yeah, that was a really special group because of how they defied the odds. I'm interested in particularly the 57 team, where you look at it in retrospect and you're like, okay, Bill Russell won 11 of 13 championships, but at some point it had to start, just like it has to start for this group with Kyrie. So kind of how is a championship team born? Your 70s team, you know, the same thing. You had to start, obviously, in 74. How is a championship identity kind of born amongst a group?
Well, I mean, the teams I played with, they were all very, very competitive people, number one, and Red really drafted people that had some kind of championship background, who had an idea of what winning was all about and how to do it. And when I coached, the guys that I coached were all competitive people too, and very aggressive. I think Bert's team, all those guys were, I mean, Bert was the master of telling people what he was going to do and then do it, you know. So it was a different type of basketball than when I played. Teams I played on, the stars were the most humble of the players. When things are going wrong, they would open themselves up to criticism from their teammates. Something that I would imagine being very difficult in this era.
That's a huge point because, you know, you think about the weight that the star player has. And there's great players and then there's star players. And you're obviously a great player. But the weight that the Bill Russell, that the Larry Bird has, that Kyrie has with this group. And what did they have to do in order for the team to be successful? Because there's Hall of Fame players around Bill Russell and Larry Bird. But the other guys are integral in order for the team to be successful.
Well, you know, you have to weigh winning against your own personal interests. And that's what it boils down to. So if you're used to winning and understand you'd rather win than lose. So when I hit on competitive people, that's the main reason. All right, competitive people want to win. So there's a better chance of them cooperating and fulfilling a role than trying to be, you know, garner the best stats in the world.
Final thing, at what point was, in your view, the Celtics as this championship preeminent basketball franchise born? Was there a particular, after a particular title, you mentioned the first one, was there a particular title where you're like, okay, this is a, we have established something that is uniquely special and is not going to be really replicated?
Well, 11 in 13 years.
Right.
And 8 in a row.
But like after the 5th, was it after you accomplished all of it that you realized what you had done?
I don't get it.
So like after the third championship, did you think of what the team was in terms of historical context, or was it in
we
retrospect?
Just went out and played every year. And wanted to win. I mean, it wasn't a matter of setting up. I mean, we set out our goal to win. But, you know, we knew we had a great basketball team if we played the way we could play. And we ended up with the best offense, the best defense. Revolutionized the game. Really created the interest in pro basketball. I mean, people thought the leprechaun was living in a building, you know.
Listen to the Press Pass. I'm Chris Ryan.